Welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. AmCham Business Podcasts are hosted by Dr. Duff Watkins. Duff is the director of Exec Search International, an author, and is also on the AmCham Council of Governors. AmCham, bringing business to you.
Hello and welcome to the business podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia, AmCham, bringing business to you. You've heard the buzz, international trade agreements, they're all the rage, they're in the press, they're in the news. And today you'll hear why the biggest, the newest, the most important of them all, the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, what's the big deal about it? You'll also learn why it took, well, forever to get negotiated and passed and why it's good that it finally did. And you'll also learn the biggest, dumbest misconception about the TPP and why it's not such a big deal. My name is Duff Watkins. I'm your host on the AmCham Business Podcast today. Our guests, we have two guests. Patrick Fazzone is a Washington, D.C.-based lawyer. He heads Montgomery Fazzone, specializing in commercial transactions and international trade law with a focus on the Asia-Pacific region. Also, Jeff Short of Tanda International, a trade advocacy firm, is with us today. And so let me start with you, if I may, Patrick. Just refresh our minds. What is the TPP? Why is it important?
Well, Duff, the TPP is a regional trade agreement between Australia and 11 other trade and investment partners in this part of the world, including some of the most important ones. And the agreement is designed to facilitate trade and investment in every sector, virtually, of the economy. Also deals with emerging issues that have not been dealt with in other trade agreements, such as e-commerce. So it's considered a comprehensive agreement, and it's a gold standard agreement in terms of the commitments that it requires all the countries to make.
Okay, why did it take so long to get passed? I mean, there was tremendous consternation and resistance to it. So there were pros and cons. Previous to you, we've had guests, the U.S. ambassador, the U.S. consul general, all trying to explain why it's good for Australia, good for the world. And there was a lot of skepticism.
Well, and that's the typical process in a trade agreement, that particularly any one that endeavors to be a comprehensive one in its scope. This is not the first time that trade agreements have met with popular skepticism, for example. I think one of the reasons why it took a long time to conclude, not a long time in terms of trade agreement negotiation, by mm-hmm. the way.
Yeah, they all take a long time.
They all take a long time. But one of the reasons why it took a fairly long period of time is its ambition. Number one, it covers a lot of different sectors and sectors that many of the trading partners had never dealt with in a trade agreement before. And it also included an ever-increasing number of countries from different levels of economic development. So in the same agreement, you have countries like Australia and the United States. You have countries like Vietnam. And you also have countries that had done very little, relatively little negotiating of trade agreements, like Japan. So you had a diverse group of countries all coming together with common purpose, but not a clear roadmap as to exactly how to do that. So who are the countries that are in the TPP? And that's a good place to start, I think, when mm-hmm. we're talking about this trade agreement. So you have Australia and the U.S., you have Japan, Canada and Mexico, as well as Vietnam, New Zealand, Chile, Malaysia, Singapore, Peru, and Brunei. That's a diverse group. These account, by the way, for about 40% of the global economy and about a quarter of all world trade. This is one agreement. Australian exports to these other 11 signatories last year was $109 billion, and these countries accounted for 45% of all Australian outbound investment.
There are customers in many ways.
Customers and investment partners. So Australian companies invest there, and they invest here in Australia.
I was told, it was explained to me, that this is not your grandfather's trade agreement. This is not like the old-fashioned agreement that used to exist. This is a whole new thing, a whole new, you said gold standard. Somebody said it's the platinum standard. It involves so many things, everything from environment to intellectual property. Is that right?
Yeah, the traditional trade agreements, let's say emanating from the old General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade and now the World Trade Organization, the traditional trade agreements were primarily focused on tariffs, reducing tariffs, and then on non-tariff barriers, so other barriers to entry of goods into a country. So they're primarily goods-based. There was an evolution, and eventually trade agreements started including other items of business like services, investment, and so forth. What this does is, this agreement, the TPP, and it's not the only agreement in the world that does this. All the U.S. agreements do this. So it's kind of the U.S. model. It takes the traditional trade agenda to a completely new level by addressing issues like, as you said, labor, the environment, electronic commerce, competition, corruption, and so forth. So the purpose of this is to try to improve world trading and investment conditions, meeting the actual challenges that companies face in the world.
Okay, well, all countries have trade agreements in place. Australia does, the U.S. does, everybody. So what's the big deal about this one? What makes it special or unique?
Well, I should say the reason why countries have trade agreements, and so many of them, is because the World Trade Organization has had difficulty extending the trade agreements, the comprehensive trade agreements, that are on its agenda. And that really has spawned a lot of the activity that we're seeing around the world, to the point where many observers call it a spaghetti bowl of trade agreements around the world. So it's a trend in the absence of WTO action. What's special about this agreement, I think you'd have to say, is its comprehensiveness, number one, that it includes a large number of diverse countries, as we've discussed, that account for a tremendous amount of trade and investment. The other thing that's distinctive about this is I think most observers are now seeing this as the template for what might hopefully become a free trade agreement throughout the Asia-Pacific region. Mm-hmm. This was originally forecast back in the 1990s at Bogor, which was at an APEC meeting hosted by Indonesia. And it may well be that such a free trade agreement will come to pass. If it does, I would forecast it would be based on a TPP model.
So the authors of the TPP are thinking big. The idea is to extend it, well, even further, internationally, globally perhaps.
Well, I think the architects of the TPP have been primarily focused on getting a deal amongst themselves that would work. And that has been the primary focus. However, they've been prepared to accept additional signatories and participants. And hence, countries like Canada, Mexico, and Japan joined throughout the process. But other countries continue to express an interest in this agreement, such as China, potentially the Philippines and others, and Indonesia. And so I think there's definitely thought that the agreement will continue to expand organically, at least throughout the Asia-Pacific region. Once you start taking it into other parts of the world, I think it would lose a lot of its focus.
Well, I heard you list those 12 countries, and I noticed you didn't list 13, China in particular. And I happen to know that China is busy trying to devise an alternate template. So can you fill me in? What's going on there?
Well, I think certainly China is becoming much more active than it ever was in negotiating free trade agreements. They negotiated one with Australia after a long, drawn-out process. China, I think most people felt at the beginning of the negotiations of the TPP that China was neither ready nor particularly interested in agreeing to a very comprehensive trade deal. However, over time, you know, there is a bit of a bandwagon effect in international trade agreements, just like in everything else. And over time, I think China has expressed more interest in acceding at some point to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, simply because I don't believe it wants to be left out of an international trade deal that could be valuable. International trade is not a zero-sum game, and China does not have to. It's not like national security or defense where it needs to have an alternative paradigm to a U.S.-led coalition. Everybody benefits if China comes in. The hard thing for China is to actually agree to commitments that it probably will not have considered to this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just going to add that that's exactly right. And I think China probably used its negotiations with Australia for the China-Australia Free Trade Agreement as a little practice, if you like, in this whole process. Because as Patrick rightly points out, it had not a lot of experience with negotiating free trade agreements. The one with Australia was the first that it concluded with a developed country. So I think what we'll see is an increasing level of confidence in China in being able to and willing to join some of these free trade agreements. And part of the dynamic of the TPP is that yes, it is, there's an openness to having other countries join the TPP, but it will always be on the basis that whichever country comes in, including China, accepts the deal as it's done so far, mm-hmm. and then builds on that. And mm-hmm. so there's not an opportunity for new members to start renegotiating what's been agreed already. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a key element of it. And this may not be a bad idea to provide just a little bit of a summary of what this agreement does. I mean, we keep talking about new age agreements and all sorts of interesting and exciting things. Well, you know, there are 17 chapters in this agreement, Duff, and so it takes a long time to read, and very few people have made it all the way through the 1,000-plus pages yet.
But you have. It's what you're working up to.
let's talk about what is in that agreement. Well, for one thing, it does address good old-fashioned market access. So it does provide for the reduction or elimination of tariffs on a whole new set of goods that may be subject to tariffs in some of the countries. It also has a very strong focus on non-tariff barriers and what are called behind-the-border measures. So other things that could keep trade suppressed. And there may be little taxes. There may be security requirements or inspection requirements. There are a whole slew of provisions in this chapter on market access that address those types of issues. It opens up new opportunities for Australian service providers because it has what's called a so-called negative schedule list, which basically means that everything is open to service providers from other countries unless those sectors are specifically included. It has rules facilitating foreign investment, restricting discriminatory practices against foreign investors. Provides for common rules on IP protection and enforcement, special provisions to assist small and mid-sized businesses. This is a completely new approach where the agreement has a chapter on how are we going to provide these benefits for smaller companies? How are they going to become beneficiaries of these new trade liberalizing measures? Has rules against corruption and promoting competitive practices on the part of large companies that are owned by governments. This was a big, important item for the U.S. government particularly. Provides access to other governments' contracts, government contracting in other countries, and it prohibits various restrictions on e-commerce. So I'm not sure that was even all of the chapters, but you could see automatically that this is something that's very ambitious.
Okay, it sounds good. In fact, it sounds too good. So here comes the hardball question. One thing I know about free trade agreements is that there are winners and there are losers. So somebody's going to suffer as a result of this thing being passed. Who do you reckon that's going to be?
Well, one thing is very sure, that in business, generally, there's competition in most markets. And one of the purposes of this free trade agreement is to increase competition in markets, not diminish it. And when you have competition, you do have some companies that perform better than others. Now, what we've seen from international trade agreements or unilateral reduction in tariffs is that some of your home industries will experience more competition. But Australia is very used to this. And I would argue that Australia is better positioned to handle those types of situations than most of these other economies, as is the United States. And what ends up happening is there is then the consumer benefit of being able to experience more competition, as well as companies becoming much more competitive. So if you want to use the words winners and losers, the immediate losers are perhaps someone that's not competitive and not able to deal with import competition. However, I would suggest that in Australia, that's a fairly small group of companies at mm-hmm. this point, mm-hmm. because Australia has been involved in world trade and dismantling its own tariff system for quite a long time now. So in our view, primarily you would have to look at this free trade agreement as benefiting countries, societies, and countries, and not disadvantaging them.
And you feel that Australia is already poised to take advantage of this?
Well, see, that's it. To me, I'm not sure if Australia would have been as well positioned 30 years ago to take advantage of this agreement. I think it would have had more disruption. Australia's becoming more like Singapore than it's becoming like some country that's close to trade. And so as Australia continues to become a very competitive environment and a very open trade investment destination and environment, I think this type of agreement benefits who? It benefits the exporters mm-hmm. and the people that want to invest overseas or the people that want to receive inward investment. So let's talk about how Trans-Pacific Partnership benefits Australian exporting. And most of us know that because Australia's consumer market is finite, the big growth often happens from international trade. So we need to look at this as really exactly what Australia wants to continue to keep doing.
I think both of you fellows feel that these trade agreements are actually critical for Australia's future. Is that right?
Well, I certainly think so.
Absolutely. And I think one, I agree entirely. And I think one of the points of confusion sometimes, Duff, is people say, well, what's the point of the TPP? We already have a bilateral free trade agreement with the US. We've got an agreement with New Zealand. We've got an agreement with Singapore and some of the other countries that are in the TPP. The benefit, I think, is that an Australian exporter or importer can choose the best available benefit from whichever agreement. So they're not, one does not supersede the other one. One does not exclude the other one. They're all still viable, they're still current, they're still available. And so it is incumbent on traders to drill down into the detail of some of these agreements and to be able to identify precisely what benefits lie within. But to the extent that they might find that a pre-existing benefit under the Australia-US Free Trade Agreement, for instance, may be better than under the TPP, they can still rely upon the US bilateral one. But I think your basic point proposition is absolutely correct. I'm sure Patrick and I are very much at one on this, that net, these are very beneficial for Australian companies.
Well, we have to remember, too, that Australia also doesn't have any trade agreements with a number of major participants in this. And so Australia doesn't have a free trade agreement with Canada or Mexico, for example. And the one it has with Japan is a relatively finite agreement. It doesn't go into most of what this agreement does. So the TPP, for example, with respect to Japan, greatly supplements the Australia-Japan Free Trade Agreement, which is recently concluded. So this is, in our view, all good news. But as Jeff pointed out, it's incumbent upon every country's companies to self-help. You have to go out and affirmatively try to understand, why is this benefiting me and how is this benefiting me?
Well, on that note, full disclosure, when I first heard of the TPP a few years ago, I was not a supporter. Frankly, it just sounded like nonsense. It sounded like, you know, corporate speak, transnational nonsense. But through talking with educated guys such as yourself, the U.S. Ambassador, U.S. Consul General, people who know far more than I do, it's become pretty clear. The evidence is pretty almost overwhelming. The benefits outweigh the cost. And of course, there will be some costs. My question to you is, why was it such a hard sell and for so long? Why was it so difficult for people, well, like me, to get it?
Well, I think there are any number of reasons, but I guess we're talking about why was it a hard sell, for example, in Australia, or why was it a hardish, kind of a hard sell in the United States? It wasn't a terribly hard sell there. There are a lot of other factors going on in the U.S. system. But let's say in Australia, was there a challenge here? Well, the Australian government definitely had a very cogent outreach program where DFAT was out there trying to talk to interested parties about what was going on. There was a lot of messaging. So it wasn't like there wasn't an effort on the part of the Australian government. I think part of it is just the fact that you always have skepticism in international trade liberalization measures. And part of it is because of a collective memory of loss of factories and jobs from imports. And so people, I think there's a visceral reaction against something that's going to maybe jeopardize the local manufacturing base. But as I said, over time, Australia has accepted the value, overall value of that. But I think also there are the same group of skeptics that often come out at any trade agreement. They talk about various downsides without actually having parsed through the agreement and how it actually benefits far more sectors of the economy than they're prepared to realize. For example, that one of the controversial provisions for a while, when it came to light, what has to do with the dispute resolution for foreign investors. And there's this perception that Australia would somehow lose some of its sovereignty by agreeing to this provision. Well, what ended up happening is an agreement was reached where Australia retained most of the sovereignty it was afraid to lose. So in actual fact, there's really nothing that we can see that's so objectionable there. Mm-hmm. Similar people came out, some groups came out and said, oh, well, this means we're going to lose control over our pharmaceutical prices and they're going to skyrocket. Nothing in this agreement or the Australia-US Free Trade Agreement or any other agreement compromises the PBS scheme. So some of it was popular conception, and when you weigh against that, the fact that people would actually need to understand what was being negotiated, it was the sound of one hand clapping. Now, one of the things that we did hear a lot, and Jeff and I and others worked very hard on this agreement to try to promote it and to assist the negotiators and so forth. We heard objections that this agreement was secret. And what was happening was we don't really trust our elected officials. What they're doing is they're trading away the store here. They're just, making all these deals. Well, there was a reason why the exact negotiating positions could not be released, because if they did, that would basically suck the oxygen out of the negotiation. However, happily, and I think the Australian government negotiators did hear a lot from concerned citizens, the final agreement, I think it's fair to say, accommodates concerns that were raised. The PBS scheme was not negotiated away. There are these safeguards on this dispute resolution procedure. And so what ended up happening, I think, is a very good agreement for Australia. Now, did Australia get everything it wanted? I believe the Australian negotiators pressed pretty hard to get greater access to the U.S. sugar market. I don't think they got that. But Australia got an awful lot of what it wanted for its exporters.
The lack of transparency or the supposed secrecy of the TPP negotiations was described to me as this. One politician said, all trade negotiations are secret. It's like a poker game, man. You don't show your cards in the first few minutes. You big stakes here. So, which kind of made perfect sense if you think about it. And you mentioned sugar. I was told it's a fact that the Australian delegation entered one meeting and the first thing the U.S. delegate says, don't bring up sugar, don't think about sugar, don't say sugar, we just don't want to hear it. That's how entrenched they were. Which is why the U.S. pays double the price for sugar than anywhere else in the world, by the way. But now let me ask you, okay, TPP, it's been passed, it's been negotiated. When is it manifested and when can we actually expect to feel or experience some of the ramifications of it?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. The negotiations have closed. The final provisions have been agreed to by the negotiating parties, but none of those parties have the ability to bind their countries to the agreement without getting domestic approval in their local political system. And so now what will happen is there's a period of consultation and so forth, politically, domestically, in every country, and then there will be ultimately, hopefully, an approval process that will go expeditiously. Can we guarantee that? No. And one of the biggest culprits potentially is the United States.
Yes, of course.
But what we're hoping is that the approval process will happen over the 2016, so that before the end of this year, all of the countries will have approved the deal. And as soon as it has been approved by everyone, all the countries, then it will come into effect. And so we will start then immediately feeling the benefits and experiencing the benefits of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There may be a few things that are phased in over time, but by and large, you'll start seeing the benefits ripple through the economy once it comes into effect. But we still have a few hurdles. It still has to be approved by all 12 countries.
Well, what sort of benefits do you imagine we will experience?
Well, I think a really good way of trying to understand that is to take a look at the Australia-US Free Trade Agreement, because it's been around for 10 years now. And over that time, people have said, we got this free trade agreement with the United States. Well, what does that do? Well, there have been macroeconomic studies that have shown an increase in Australian exports over that time, an increase in the overall trade, a continued increase in investment between the countries, and an overall, therefore, net at the macro level, benefit to Australia and the United States. I think you would find that virtually every trade agreement would do that, would have that kind of macro benefit. But also, I think it's important to take it down to the micro level, to the company, to the individual that wants to do business or travel or work in another country. And in our experience, and I kind of work at the micro level often with individual clients, we've seen really a great increase in opportunities to sell and invest overseas and vice versa as a result of these free trade agreements. A lot less red tape, reduction in tariffs, duty-free treatment suddenly. And so our expectation is that individual companies, as well as the economy and society as a whole, will experience those types of benefits. And it, for someone who is doing their homework, these may start immediately.
And I think the key point Patrick just made is companies doing their homework, because there's an old adage that governments don't trade, only companies trade. So the governments work very hard to conclude these free trade agreements. And unless and until companies do something about it, they remain agreements, not changes in practice. And one small anecdote, Duff, relates to an instance where a client of ours, 18 months after the creation of the Australia-US Free Trade Agreement, had not taken advantage of it. Now, this particular company importing into Australia dealt with very high-value products, and they had paid millions of dollars in customs duty unnecessarily over that 18-month period. It's incumbent on importers and exporters to actually do the work, as Patrick suggests, you know, read or get advice these and understand the practicalities of claiming those benefits under the TPP.
Mm. In conclusion, let me just say almost everything I've learned about international trade and the Trans-Pacific Partnership has come through AmCham, largely through efforts of you gentlemen. Now, just enlighten us, because a lot of folks don't know how active, not just in terms of having input, but actually shaping international trade policy in Australia. Basically, AmCham does a lot of lobbying, and you're the guys that do it. Can you sort of tell us what you guys get up to in the Trade and Government Committee?
Well, Doug, very quickly, it really be our pleasure to do that. And AmCham has been doing this for a long period of time, and Jeff and I have been involved in that effort for a long period of time. Essentially, AmCham does a couple of things. Number one, it has a committee structure, and that committee structure is charged with identifying issues and opportunities that companies really need to know about, primarily our members, but then that information does become publicly available as well. So our oldest committee probably at this point is the Trade and Government Committee that I chair and that Jeff vice chairs, and that committee has been here for quite some time. And we do several things. One thing, we monitor developments, we're in constant communication with Australian and U.S. government officials, as well as other sources of information, and of course our members. We formulate policies based on member input and the knowledge of our members of the committee, and then we engage in regular meetings in Canberra and in Washington to convey the concerns of our, or the views of our organization and our members. And since the Trade and Government Committee, AmCham has added a whole group of other committees as well, including a health committee, which deals with health issues, pharmaceutical and so forth. Also, same kind of policy approach, as well now as a defense committee and several others. So AmCham at that level is very involved. And we also have a very active CEO that reaches out into the community and hears from individual AmCham members and takes very high-profile positions on important issues and opportunity areas. So we actually, I think, have a number of different resources that we bring to bear. The AmCham system brings in speakers and so forth. So we disseminate information, develop positions, and actually outreach.
And we do podcasts as well. We'll finish on that note. You've been listening to the AmCham Business Podcast today. Our guests have been Jeff Short and Patrick Fazone, AmCham's go-to guys when it comes to international trade. If you'd like to get a message to Patrick or Jeff, please drop an email at podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, if you're listening to us through iTunes, you can easily hit the subscribe button, leave a review, make a comment, all of which are very appreciated, because we want to know what you want to know. What are the topics? Who are the people? What are the issues that are of interest to you? Just email us, podcast@amcham.com.au. In fact, you can hear more of the podcast on the website, amcham.com.au. This is AmCham, and that means bringing business to you. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Business Podcast of the American Chamber of Commerce in Australia. This podcast is supported by VML. VML is a full-service digital marketing agency that can take you where you want to go. Everything we are is in everything we do. This is AmCham, bringing business to you.